Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Anye cha bunayo brahman.
Anye cha bunayo brahman.
Namaratadayo malaha.
Namaratadayo malaha.
Shishyar upeta ajagmu.
Shishyar upeta ajagmu.
Kashyapan girasadayaha.
Kashyapan girasadayaha.
Anyecha munayo brahman.
Anyecha munayo brahman.
Namaratadayo malaha.
Namaratadayo malaha.
Shishyarupeta ajagmuhu.
Shishyarupeta ajagmuhu.
Kashyapangirasadayaha.
Kashyapangirasadayaha.
Anye.
Anye.
Many others.
Many others.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Munayaha,
Munayaha,
sages,
sages,
Brahman,
Brahman,
O Brahmanas,
O Brahmanas,
Brahmarata,
Brahmarata,
Shukadeva Goswami,
Shukadeva Goswami,
Adayaha,
Adayaha,
and such others,
and such others,
Amalaha,
Amalaha,
completely purified,
completely purified,
Shishyai,
Shishyai,
by the disciples,
by the disciples,
Upetaha,
Upetaha,
accompanied,
accompanied,
Ajagmuhu,
Ajagmuhu,
arrived,
arrived,
Kashyapa,
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 Kashyapa.
Angirasa,
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 Adayaha,
Adayaha,
others,
others.
Translation, and many others like Shukadeva Goswami and other purified souls, Kashyapa and Angirasa, and others, accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. And the purport is biographies of three personalities. Many biographies, Shukadeva, Kashyapa, and Angirasa. Shukadeva Goswami, Brahmaratha, the famous son and disciple of Sri Vyasadeva, who taught him first the Mahabharata and then the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami recited 1,400,000 verses of the Mahabharata in the council of the Gandharvas, Yakshas, Rakshasas. And then he recited Srimad Bhagavatam for the first time in the presence of Maharaj Parikshit. He thoroughly studied all the Vedic literatures from his great father. Thus, he was a completely purified soul by dint of his extensive knowledge in the principles of religion from Mahabharata, Shabha Parva 4.11. It is understood that he was also present in the royal assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira and at the fasting of Maharaj Parikshit. As a bona fide disciple of Sri Vyasadeva, he inquired from his father very extensively about religious principles and spiritual values. And his great father also satisfied him by teaching him the yoga system, by which one can attain the spiritual kingdom, the difference between fruitive work and empiric knowledge, the ways and means of attaining spiritual realization, the four ashramas, namely student life, household life, retired life, and renounced life, the sublime position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the process of seeing Him eye to eye, the bona fide candidate for receiving knowledge, the consideration of the five elements, the unique position of intelligence, the consciousness of the material nature and the living entity, long subjects, the symptoms of the self-realized soul, the working principles of the material body, the symptoms of the influential modes of nature, the tree of perpetual desire, and psychic activities. Sometimes he went to the sun planet with the permission of his father and Naradaji. Descriptions of his travel in space are given in Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata, 3.3.2. At last he attained the transcendental realm. He is known by different names, like Araneya, Arunisuta, Vyasaki, and Vyasatmaja. End of Shukadeva's mini biography. Then Kashyapa. One of the Prajapatis, the son of Marichi, and one of the sons-in-law of Prajapati Daksha. He is the father of the gigantic bird Garuda, who was given elephants and tortoises as eatables. He married 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha, and their names are Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kashta, Arishta, Surasa, Ila, Muni, and Kodavasha, Tamra, Suravi, Sarama, and Timi. He begot many children, both demigods and demons, by those wives. From his first wife, Aditi, all the 12 Adityas were born. One of them is Vamana, the incarnation of Godhead. The great sage Kashyapa was also present at the time of Arjuna's birth. He received a presentation of the whole world from Parashuram. And later on he asked Parashuram to go out of the world. His other name is Arishta Nemi. He lives on the northern side of the universe. End of his biography. And Angirasa. He is the son of Maharshi Angira and is known as Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods. It is said that Dronacharya was his partial incarnation, Shukracharya was the spiritual master of the demons, and Brihaspati challenged him. His son is Kacha, K-A-C-A. And he delivered the fire weapon first to Bharadvaj Muni. He begot 6 sons, like the fire god, by his wife Chandramasi, one of the reputed stars. He could travel in space, and therefore he could present himself even in the planets of Brahmaloka and Indraloka. He advised the king of heaven, Indra, about conquering the demons. Once he cursed Indra, who thus had to become a hog on the earth and was unwilling to return to heaven. Such is the power of the attraction of the illusory energy. Even a hog does not wish to part with its earthly possessions in exchange for a heavenly kingdom. He was the religious preceptor of the natives of different planets. End of purport. So, Hare Krishna. This is, the chapter is chapter 8, the passing away of Grandfather Bhishma, and what's taking place is on the occasion of Grandfather Bhishma's passing, many great sages, just like they did when it was known that Maharaj Parikshit would be leaving, they came to experience the great event, at the same time give their blessings by their presence. Whenever there's some transition point for the soul, in different cultures it's known in different by different names, but the the Vedic term is sangskaras and other rituals. It's rites of passage. They're ceremonial functions that are performed when the soul transits from this stage to that stage, from that stage to the next stage, from next stage to the... because there's... It's an opportunity, special opportunity, when there's junction points for leaving behind something and acquiring a more auspicious something or another something. And when those transition points take place, auspiciousness is invoked, so that at the beginning of that next something, it's made most favorable, ultimately, for our spiritual destination. These, what's found in other cultures, one can understand it comes from Vedic culture, and it's ultimately, in the Vaishnava sense, it's meant to offer respect to the personality of Godhead. And invoking the blessings of the personality of Godhead upon that soul or those souls who are involved in that situation, like death, the passage of the soul to the next situation. It makes it doesn't carry the soul to the personality of Godhead. That's the individual free will and the individual purity of the soul, but it's making the atmosphere as much as possible auspicious. So, you know, birth, marriage, initiation, each of the samskaras that and death, each of the ones in the course of life, they're ceremonial, traditional rituals that are performed. And that's the function of them. Just to dwell on this a little bit more. Spiritual life, progress on the path of spiritual life, is made up of so many beginnings, so many steps of leaving behind something and entering into a new something. It's, you know, it's a great adventure, spiritual life. And it does require to go forward, leaving behind something. many devotees, surprising number of devotees, have the experience that when beginning chanting, I made mention of this very lightly last night, but when beginning the process of devotional service, particularly beginning the process of chanting, there's a innocence in one's attitude towards the process and towards chanting, and a freshness and an excitement and a thrill. And for a variety of reasons, chanting is not, it's not the same struggle that it might become later on to diligently perform chanting. And one of the ways to help bring about that same experience. I'll just from this Japa retreat that we had, I learned a lot of things. And one of the things we had everyone got to tell their little story, and three or four devotees described that before I lived in a temple, I was chanting, and I found that I could chant with great attention for 2 hours and fixed. This is like Radha Krishna in Houston. Very nice brahmachari, very wonderful person. Served Mal Krishna Maharaj as his personal servant longer than anybody else lasted. Great credit to him. And you know, this was his one. He was one of the ones that said like this, that now it takes me 3 hours, and there's always interruptions, and it's more difficult. And several people said that, so it kind of evolved like a theme in our retreat, that in different traditions there is this notion of beginning afresh, beginning anew in spiritual life, because like Krishna is Navayovana, he's eternally youthful, eternally fresh, eternally young, eternally new. And the experience of Krishna is like that. It's ever fresh. There's no tiring. At least, you know, if we're on the spiritual platform. And if we're not on the spiritual platform, it can be, you know, duty at best and a struggle and further down the line, something we just don't even do because, you know, other things are occupying our mind. So it's nice to take up steps on the spiritual path with that same freshness and newness and sense of beginning, or the continuation of the journey is yet another beginning each day, each activity that we do, each mantra that we chant, each time we chant around, each time we do things in a regulated manner. And so there's a tendency for familiarity, or just kind of routine-ish. And then, you know, if that mentality of routine-ishness is there, you know, then the mind has its way of selecting reasons why I don't need to take part in the routine, because today, da-da-da-da. And then it becomes a string of days, and then it becomes, the regulation is lost because of jaded mentality or materialistic mentality or mentality of familiarity, rather than the sensing, here's this great mercy, great opportunity, and taking that opportunity with a fresh beginning each time. There's value in regulation. There's risk in complacency with regulation. And so one should take up regulation with the right purpose, that this is beneficial. By regulation, it will enhance the quality of goodness and make it more favorable for me to enter into what the essence of this activity is, that is, Sangha with Krishna. Direct contact with Krishna through the regulation of the bhakti yoga process. That's, you know, for the sadhana stage. So that one can get to the, as we discussed last night, the you can't help yourself stage. The quality stage. Because it's the mind just becomes thrilled with contact with Krishna. And that's what we want. I mean, that's why we're here instead of somewhere else. And that enthusiasm needs to be renewed and refreshed regularly, leaving behind the other stuff and taking up the new stuff, taking up that further step towards Krishna. And the association of devotees is a enthusiasm enhancer. As long as the devotees that we're associated with are like-minded, that is, they also want to go further steps and further steps and further steps and further steps on this exciting path of devotion. And so, traditionally, when these transition points of the soul, and the transition points of the soul is marked by changes of stages of the body, like before conception, during gestation, at the time of birth, at the taking of the first grain, hair cutting, and so on. It's changes of the soul, the body, or the soul that's inhabiting the body, undergoing its bodily transformation. So it's material, is what the point I want to make. It's in relation to the body, so it's material. But how to spiritualize those steps of the changes of body so that one's life becomes more favorable to the spiritual side, to the spiritual awakening side. That's the life of a progressive individual. A soul that in their dependent stage, their parents are helping them transit, but then those impressions that are made, ultimately the soul is making choices independent of those who they are dependent upon, as they become in progressive stages independent with powers of rational faculty and so forth, to make choices that lead one to the kingdom of God. And when those rites of passage moments, when the ritual times come, to invite or bringing in the presence of elevated souls makes more auspicious the success, or makes more likely the success of the soul transiting to the next position and leaving behind the previous position. Because these are souls that, when they're elevated souls like the ones mentioned here, they're progressive or progressed. They're either very, very advanced on that path of spiritual elevation, or they're already there at the stage of perfection, like Shukadeva Goswami. For example, when Bali Maharaj was performing his ritual ceremony, overseen by Shukracharya, and just at the time oblations were to come, an effulgent dwarf brahmana was approaching, and Bali was thinking, how wonderful, a brahmana of such, whoever he is, such elevated status that there's this glowing effulgence surrounding him. This will be an auspicious yajna just by his presence. He's so kind to come and make it certain that the sacrifice will be successful. I want to give him in charity whatever he wants. Just that desire arose from his heart. And sure enough, the yogi was more than successful. It made him eligible for receiving the touch of the lotus feet upon his head, the Lord's feet upon his head, by that submission and surrender. So that's when those auspicious personalities are present. There's two sides to all this. Just like yesterday evening, there's some mercy, and then there's the eagerness to receive the mercy. And the eagerness to receive the mercy is that submission. I want this auspiciousness in my life. I want to achieve the satisfaction of Vishnu. And if great personalities are respected and received warmly and gratefully within one's heart, then Vishnu will be pleased more than doing something just to try to please Vishnu. And we'll will find that that's what Bhishma Dev did, although he was literally immobilized. He received the stages in with such graciousness, although he couldn't do anything besides lift his finger and say a few things. They were so satisfied. And by such personalities being satisfied, the personality of Godhead is satisfied. Very clearly, that connection. Boom, boom. The saintly persons are satisfied, Krishna is satisfied. And that's the consciousness. It's certainly satisfying those saintly persons, but the consciousness is Krishna should be pleased. In fact, that should be the consciousness of each of the things that we do, whether it's involved with saintly persons or otherwise. Just doing our routine things of life, they should be done in such a way that Krishna is satisfied. Whatever it is that we're doing, Krishna should be pleased. And in that consciousness, like our discussion last night, this, that my heart become purified by taking this activity up in such a way that Krishna will be pleased, that makes the heart pure. And that's the meditation of one who is on this progressive path. It means letting go of other things and taking up the position of purity, because our prior condition is not purity. Look a little bit over this way, a little bit over that way, over your shoulder, what's behind you. It's not purity. It's a whole lot of other things, but it's not purity. So going towards Krishna brings purity, and let me, the aspiration of the devotee is, let that purity fill my heart, and that means letting go of other things. And at different stages of life, there are different things that one likes to hold on to. Here in this example is the curse of Indra to become a hog. Prabhupada told this story many times. And so Indra became a hog. And then when his 10 years as a hog was over, he was invited to come back to be the king of heaven, and Indra's answer was no. What will I do without my she-hog and all my piglets? They're dependent upon me and my mud pen. How will I live without my mud pen? I'm going to stay here. King of heaven, the throne is waiting. One becomes so easily attached. Whatever the circumstance, the tendency is, without Krishna consciousness, absent Krishna consciousness, become attached to whatever. And then we become like animals. You know, we got our turf. Someone comes near our turf and we're barking. Bow wow, bow wow, bow wow. And the whole thing is temporary. It's missing altogether the purpose of whatever facility is provided. The facility that's provided from a Krishna conscious perspective is, it's some facility for service to Krishna. Krishna has provided this facility. Let me use this facility in Krishna's service. And if he wants it to be used in some other way, let it be used in some other way. I'm just passing through. But while we're passing through, we get attached. It's mine. Bow wow. Or wag our tail because somebody passed us on the head. It's just that attachment to material existence. So the association of great personalities is to help us become detached from that tendency to be attached, and to be attached to the Supreme. nasate vijite bhavo nam bhavo vijite sataha. Ubayor api Krishna unto us tvaniyos tattva darshabhihi. Nice verse. Very early in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching that those who are seers of the truth, they don't place much value in the temporary. But they place great value in that which is eternal. But that which is eternal, you can't see it, smell it, hear it, taste it, and touch it with these material senses. It's beyond the senses. But that is what is of value. The eternal soul, not the temporary. A nice little section of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam comes when Vritrasura has been created from the fire by Tvashta, and he's the early terrorist. He terrorized the demigods and chased them out of their kingdom. They fled for their lives. And they went wimping to Lord Vishnu. Vishnu, Vishnu! They offered their prayers, and he appeared before them, and then they offered direct prayers to him. And in those direct prayers, very nice, they indicated the distinction between the position of fear and fearlessness. Very nice. They said, you're the repose of both, and you're beyond both. From you comes fear, and from you comes fearlessness. And they said, the factor is intelligence. It's like coming down the chute, comes Krishna's energy. And there's this deflector, it goes one way or the other way, and that deflector is the intelligence. Same thing, one sees fear. And the other sees fearlessness. And the intelligence is how we see Krishna. How we see that source. If the source is covered by ignorance, then it's fear. Here comes Vritrasura. And we're feeling fear. Then they say that, they describe that your pure devotee only sees you. And so, they experience fearlessness. And how can such persons in any adversity ever abandon shelter of you and service to you? It's not thinkable. You know, the unspoken part is we're trembling. We don't have that intelligence. They have enough intelligence to know that there are those that have that intelligence. They also have enough intelligence to know that they don't have that intelligence. So they prayed to the Lord for his shelter. And then because they have this other intelligence, they also, you know, they pray, please make an arrangement to get our kingdom back. They're attached. Indra is attached to the king. To protect his kingdom of heaven, he does abominable things. Terrible things. Disgusting things. Prideful things, arrogant things, sinful things, violating other women things, because of this attachment to the idea that I'm the enjoyer of facility of heaven. And that same mentality goes into I'm the enjoyer of this body as a hunk, and other situations in between. It's amazing. Although people are suffering, they're thinking this is enjoyment. And that's the idea in the position of a hog. Why would yes take me out of this terrible? No, I'm attached, and I want to make a permanent claim. I want to live eternally in whatever this suffering position is. Call it enjoyment. It's mad. So Vishnu's response is, my dear Indra, It's not my position to entangle my devotees further in material complexities. And so I'm essentially, he made an arrangement where they can get saintly association. The arrangement was, he sent them to Dadichi. Said, you ask Dadichi for the bones of his body. See what happens. And then when he gives you the bones of his body, you take the bones of his body to Vishvakarma and give Vishvakarma this message that with these bones he's to fashion a thunderbolt that will be able to destroy Vishwarup, Vishvatrasura. Go ahead, go see Dadichi. Go take the association of a saintly person. It's like medicine. And so they didn't take fullest advantage. Indra used his diplomacy and said, oh, Dadichi, great saintly person. Everyone that is a saintly person knows that the value of life is to do great service to others. And so Lord Vishnu has sent us here asking for the bones of your body. Great service to others. So that the kingdom of heaven can be returned to the devas and taken away from the asuras. Dadichi responded by saying, Indra, what are you asking? Don't you know that the dearmost thing to everyone is their own body? Even if requested by Vishnu himself, how could one give up the body? Please consider. So Indra gave another clever answer. He's very good at word jugglery and knows the conclusions of scriptures, although he can't follow them. So he spoke similar way about the elevated status of his words of flattery. He's very good. And then his conclusions about what the absolute truth is. All things are meant to be used, and this is Vishnu's request. So the Dadichi replied, I was just making fun. I just wanted to see how you would respond. Certainly you can have my body. Just like that, he withdrew his senses in a state of trance, left his body and returned to the spiritual world on will, just like, you know, U-turn heading to the spiritual world, because it was the will of Vishnu. And otherwise he can do some service here or he can do some service elsewhere. That's what the body is for. If the Lord wants the body for some other purpose, so be it. The Lord wants me to serve in some other situation, some other place, so be it. Through the association of saintly persons, that transition is made more easy, to go from a former position to a new position. And spiritual path of spiritual life is like that. Step by step. Sometimes the steps are more dramatic. Sometimes the steps are more gentle. But progress means letting go and accepting. And saintly persons are very essential in making that happen. I mean, like, as in, not optional. And how we have regard for such saintly persons is also not optional. If we have that opportunity but don't have the right regard, then we're not going to make progress. We'll make offenses. And that's a problem, because then even progress is blocked, or the impetus to progress is blocked, and one becomes resentful towards such personalities. And what does Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna think of that? Very displeased. And so that's very troublesome for the individual. So it's something that we need to monitor very carefully. And this first canto of the Bhagavatam, if you haven't noticed it, it's filled with circumstances of how to receive a saintly person. Filled with, from chapter 1 to chapter 19. It's filled with this very important principle of spiritual advancement. Receiving the sage, how to receive the sage, how to open one's heart. There's protocol things, but there's also internal things. And then there's the compassion of the saintly person and that gift that they come to bring. It's replete in this first canto, because the first canto is setting the foundation for the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's approaching the lotus feet of the literary incarnation of the Personality of Godhead in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. How to approach the lotus feet? One must be in a very humble position and recognize who the Lord is. Because if we don't have even a clue who the Lord is, like, say, a scholar, we'll go and, you know, make all kinds of renderings of the message. As Devananda Pandit did in Lord Chaitanya. He's very displeased with him. But then, by Lord Chaitanya's association, he corrected that mentality. Lord Chaitanya is most merciful. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation through which we can come to appreciate how to move progressively on the spiritual path. So I didn't cover the biographies of Shukadeva Goswami and Kashyapa and Angirasa. These are descriptions primarily from Mahabharata. The picture that we have of Shukadeva Goswami from the Bhagavatam is a fully transcendental depiction. Prabhupada chose to include the Mahabharata renderings, which are not of the same. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, and the Mahabharata is an itihasa that helps us much more in understanding details of morality, ethics, and codes of behavior, fundamentals of knowledge like that. Srimad Bhagavatam is rasa literature. It inspires attraction for Krishna directly. And Prabhupada chose to include these personalities so that we, the Western audience, that he brought this first canto to, to hear the Bhagavatam, would have some little capsule sense of what these personalities mean in Vedic literature, in the rest of the Vedic literature. Kashyapa, one of the principal Prajapatis, there's so many descriptions of him, including descriptions of him in the Bhagavatam. The daughters of Prajapati Daksha, 13 of them, including Aditi and Diti and so forth. That there's a whole chapter in the sixth canto, a whole section in the sixth canto describing these daughters and their offspring and the sons of Diti and Aditi. Very important personalities. I think I'll end. Any discussion? Yes?
Much more than how to describe between the tradition, or the thing that we have to take his education, did he learn a lesson?
He doesn't get it. He, you know, temporarily, but there's attachment. That's why he's Indra. To attain the heavenly planets, one must be a very pious devotee to attain the post of the King of Heaven. Exceptionally pious devotee, but at the same time not a pure devotee. So the not pure part is being attached to be the enjoyer of the fruits of piety or the fruits of one's spiritual merit. And there is such a tendency. I'll venture to say this. I hope I don't offend. People that come from India to America to further their education and establish themselves in a career, or devotees from Mayapur and Bombay that come to America to do devotional service, there's a known quantum of, you know, upgrading one's material enjoyment position. It's there. And because it's there, that it puts one at great risk. Great risk. If you're not aware of what it is, and you just, like, let it grow, you don't remove it, but you let it grow, through the watering process of the chanting of the holy name, it can get stronger and stronger. And, you know, so one has to recognize that danger. As happens with the King of Heaven. So a pious soul that takes the King of Heaven position, he can just becomes intoxicated with the fruits of the past activity that now are abundantly available, and becomes proud and becomes hurtful and abusive to his spiritual master and hurtful to other living beings, and takes the position to be the enjoyer of material facilities, and does, you know, abominable stuff that never would have been considered before that situation arose. There's one, I'll not say his name because this is being recorded, but there's one South Indian doctor that I know, and his sister married another doctor. She was a doctor, his sister was a doctor, and her husband was a doctor, and his name was Dr. Acharya. Dr. Acharya not only was a physician, but Dr. Acharya became, you know, the head of a certain department in the hospital, and because of being the head in the department in that certain hospital, he had to attend functions where, you know, he had to socially mix, and as he was socially mixing, he started changing. You know, he was a Sri Vaishnava Brahmin, but he started, you know, taking foods. Then he started taking drinks. Then he started associating with other women. And then he left his wife and two children to hang out, you know, to run away with another woman. And the individual was telling me, and the irony of it all is his name was Acharya. Dr. Acharya. From a very strict background, you know, very strict Sri Vaishnava Brahmin family. Went off with another woman, abandoned his wife and kids. Because of this yucky culture that we have. And abandoned his, it's a Jamil story in a modern version. And it happens. So it can happen whether one is in devotee clothes or, you know, in non-devotee clothes, but associating with this position of the mood of enjoyment, and it's an infection that one can easily pick up if one isn't cautious. One needs to take precaution. And there is protection if one takes shelter and stays or comes to the mood of devotion, then one can move in that environment and be protected. Indra doesn't seem to get it. He learns a lesson, he suffers, and does penances and austerities and, you know, gets some forgiveness, and then he goes off and does it again. So pure devotion, to strive for pure devotion, following the path, in our particular case, following the path of Rupa Goswami, striving, anukayena krishna anushimana, striving for that position is our place of protection. Indra should just, you know, meet Rupa Goswami and he'd be alright. Something else? Yes. No. Clearly, different position. He just gets carried away. Yes.
Maharaj, when one is in this passing through position and accumulates certain facilities, how does, what are some litmus tests that one can
attachment? And then the other is, if it's lost, can you do without this something? I'd be happy.
To test ourselves,
so at least in your mind, entertain, you know, I don't have this facility. We should be, and periodically, to consciously go into a without facility situation, deliberately, purposefully, and test, you know, and find the happiness in your relationship with Krishna, not in the facility. Like, you know, from time to time, austerities of fasting and so forth, on Janmashtami and different auspicious days. And just, you know, withdraw your mind from the stuff. And absorb, can your mind get absorbed in the name? And the, you know, the spirit of devotion, or the mind, you know, being pulled in all directions by, you know, the addictions of stuff. So to regularly, at least periodically, I should say, periodically, just do a little bit of that deliberately. It's very refreshing. I'll make a comment that this 5-day japa retreat experience was very powerful, and the conclusion of those that were kind of organizing it is we would like to make this part of our culture and Krishna conscious experience. As during a certain period of time, there was an idea that we should have systematic study of Prabhupada's books, and that became Bhakti Shastri. And then there's, like, you know, there's abundance now of Bhakti Shastri things that you can just plug into one of your choice of 100. There's a lot of options. It's become part of our culture now. Bhakti Vaibhava and Bhakti Vedanta and so forth. Those things are developing. So this type of thing is also something that is likely to develop. Now there's a sidebar discussing this in Dallas with Prajapati Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple. And he was saying, you know, when I was a new devotee, or before I became a devotee, I was part of the Integral Yoga Society, and from time to time they had these retreats, and that was nice. But then I saw, you know, here's the Hare Krishna movement, where they do this every day. They're not just doing some meditation in a retreat environment from time to time. They're doing it 7-8 hours a day every day with Harinam Sankirtan. I'm going to go join them. And so my response to Prajapati was, there's merit in both things. Certainly, you know, the primary thing that the Prabhupada gave us was Harinam Sankirtan. But I experienced things during this retreat that I didn't experience during Harinam Sankirtan, and vice versa. All things have their place, and it was good. I mean, we weren't completely off the grid, but the environment was very conducive. It was a 300-acre forest situation, and very quiet and peaceful. Little cabin to stay in, and the scenes of nature all around. So, and not the hubbub of daily stuff. Anyway. When something is, so this is the Yukta Vairagya principle put to test. Are we engaging things in Krishna's service, or are those things engaging us in their service? Are we dutifully and responsibly responding to email, or are we addicted to email? Just as a time filler. And so on. Is the internet something that we can use in Krishna's service? We just become addicted to, surfing. And then you come across something that's, shocking to your sensibility, and you just kind of dwell there. The mindfulness of service to Krishna is what's important. You can check yourself in that way. Yeah? Yeah, he's the repose of everything, but he's beyond fear or fearlessness. So the fear is a material thing, and fearlessness, just like you've seen these decals, this guy with his real mean face, no fear. Beyond that. That's a bluff, no fear. Or it's ignorance. They're facing a serious challenge. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm indignant. I'll take on anything. Like Hiranyakashipu. So the beyond that sense of duality. So where the devotee experiences is the protection of the Supreme Lord, and that's genuine fearlessness as opposed to this defiance or bluff. The kshatriya-like or demon-like position of no fear. Anything else? Chakri, anything? You're happy? Okay. We're happy. You're happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.